Welcome back to the Hawkins Reports, a Stranger Things podcast by LSG Media. I'm your host, Dean.
I'm Jessica.
On this week's episode, we bring you Season 2, Chapter 8, The Mind Flayer. All right, we're back, and it's been a while. We apologize for the delay. We blame Matt Anderson, so please direct all of your complaints to Matthew Anderson.
All hate mail.
All hate mail goes to Matthew Anderson.
Matthew at lsgmedia.com.
He was in town, as you know, for a few days over Thanksgiving, and we didn't want to just fly him out and make him work. He was two episodes behind, so while he was here, we elected to not record our Stranger Things podcasts. But now we're back at it, baby, and we're recording it, and it is a Tuesday. I think we're probably going to do the last episode on Sunday, so it'll be not 10 days this time.
it'll be a long time, but it'll be worth it, hopefully.
Only 5 days, half as much time to be waited. And it's the last episode, so, you know, we got to try to get three people on here, maybe more. We'll see.
Yeah.
But let's dive right in to the Mind Flayer, yep. Also known as an illithid in Forgotten Realms. The illithid, also called a Mind Flayer, was an evil and sadistic being, humanoid in appearance, but with a four-tentacled octopus-like head. These beings were feared throughout the Underdark for their telepathic abilities, and usually were not without two or more slaves, mentally bound to each individual Mind Flayer. Now you know.
I'm actually triggered by your making fun of geek culture.
Why? I'm balls deep in geek culture. Mind Flayer is one of my favorite creatures.
You did
in
say that immediately.
Dungeons and Dragons. It's cool. I like using them. They're the shit. I like using them against my players. I like making them. I like fucking with their brains.
Wow.
But let's talk about the other Mind Flayer. Let's talk about the Hawkins Mind Flayer variety, the one from the Upside Down world.
Uh-huh.
Not really a Mind Flayer, but he calls it one. They still call it a shadow monster. But so, overall impressions. Now, you told me you had a bit of a spoiler here.
Yes.
Do you want to make fun of anybody for that spoiler?
Sure. Our good friend, Samantha Papa, listener of the podcast.
Her whole name. Now people are going to dox her.
Yeah, that's right. She's an Illuminati member too, I think. So, got to tell the truth. Anyways, we're all out at dinner and she mentioned something about Stranger Things. And she was like, oh, what episode do you want? And I said, oh, we just saw episode 7 with 11. The sister is so annoying. Like, whatever. We were like drinking wine. It was a wine tasting dinner. And then she was like, oh man, that was so sad when Bob died. And I was just like, ooh.
And I missed it.
And Dean missed it. Thank God. But I sure did not.
Yeah. Well, I think her man, Mike's rubbing off on her because he is a notorious read ahead spoiler guy. He loves to know everything that's going to happen in shows. He loves it.
And he likes to spoil it for other people, especially if he's ever drunk. Like the one time he was drunk at like a bachelor party and didn't he tell everybody like everything that ever happened on Game of Thrones?
No, that was me.
Oh, that was you. Yeah. Just kidding. When Dean gets drunk at bachelor parties,
he tells
everybody everything about Game of Thrones.
I was in a limo. I let a few deaths go. I was very irresponsible with my death knowledge safety. I did not exercise proper handling of my death knowledge information, and an accident occurred, and there were casualties.
It's real hard because there are some people who are big spoiler people.
Write to your congressman and tell them that you think that all spoilers should be banned from the country, and we can be just like Australia.
It's real hard. There's this one guy I work with who literally tells spoilers like on the regular, and you start talking to him, and you say something like, hey, but he'll not listen to this podcast. Hey, Andy, I just watched 2 episodes of season 2 of Stranger Things. He's like, oh, yeah, man, I just finished. It was so cool. And then he just goes and starts talking about like episode 8. And it's like, Andy, slow your roll. You literally just heard me say episode 2. And he does about everything. He just did it to me the other day about a book. Like, I was like, oh, I'm reading Mr. Mercedes. And he's like, oh, I just started the sequel. And he starts telling me what's happening in the sequel. I'm like, what part of I'm in the middle of reading the first one? Don't you understand? Like, famous for that shit.
I got you.
I avoided him. I've been avoiding him the entire time I've been watching the show.
Yeah. Yeah, it's crazy. You know, and what people might not know on this show, spoilers aside, we're going to be doing a Battlestar Galactica podcast. In fact, it's available in the iTunes store now and on your podcasting apps. It's called Recommissioned, a Battlestar Galactica podcast. If you just search LSG Media, you'll find it. If you like Stranger Things, you might like Battlestar Galactica. I don't know. The reason I'm selflessly pitching this right now is because spoilers are hard to avoid for that one. So Matt's totally in the dark on that. He's experiencing it as he goes. But I don't understand people with spoilers. Like, it's too bad she spoiled it. I was fortunate to not be spoiled. And I'm still unspoiled as to the last episode, which is great. So let's dive into the Mind Flayer.
I also cried when Grandpa died.
Okay, I'm sure you're going to talk all about that. We start right where we left off, don't we?
No, I wrote, literally, this is the best thing, is I wrote, we open right where we ended. And then I was like, oh, wait, there's a whole episode in between.
Right. Oh.
I totally forgot. And it's so funny that you wrote the same thing.
Holy shit.
Because I wrote it in my notes and later I went back and I was like, oh, shit, we opened where episode 6 ended. And I like typed it in like in parentheses. And it's so funny that you wrote the same thing. So we're all in denial that episode 7 never happened.
That's funny. While she was doing her auditioning for fucking L7 or whatever she was doing.
She was like, oh, I'd like to be in your punk rock band.
But, all right, so yeah, not where we left off. Whoopsie. Hi, podcast. It's what I do. So, where we left off in episode 6. How about that?
That sounds better.
We got, what are we calling them? Demo dogs?
I'm calling them demo dogs, yeah. I for sure am, because Justin, he was pretty insistent. He is my little buddy, so.
So, we got demo dogs coming in hot. We go right into the action. They smash us right into it. And I like this demo. This is a great open. We got demo dogs coming up through the hole. Hopper and Owen watches they start bashing the glass. Owen seems confident in the glass, but nope, multiple demo dogs start bashing it in. It's starting to give. Owen smashes the alarm. People start running around. The demo dogs break into the lab. Mike says they need to make Will sleep. And we kind of move from this chaos in the halls right into Will's room. And Mike's like, you got to make him sleep. We got to make him sleep. Bob hears the gunfire in the hallway. I love that. That's when Bob and everyone, Bob, Sean Astin's so good in this episode. The way he responds to the gunfire is like you would imagine anyone would. Like, whoa, holy shit, is that gunfire? Right? It's awesome. Joyce realizes that Mike is right. This is great out of Winona, right? When she realizes.
Yes. But she asks him first. She's like, do you know who I am? And it took him so long to get to it. Like, he's still there, but there's so much covering it up. And she's like, okay.
It's great.
She gives him a sedative.
Yep, it's excellent.
And while she's, and what's actually just as excellent is Bob holds him down, she gives him a sedative, and Mike is standing there, and Will's screaming, and the alarms are blaring, there's gunshots, and Mike is standing there with his ears covered. It was like the most realistic, it's exactly how I imagine a 12-year-old kid would react in this circumstance. It was so good.
Yeah, covering his ears just because he can't deal with like the trauma of seeing Will not be Will.
Right, like he doesn't want to hear it, and there's much chaos everywhere.
He's lying, he's lying, he's lying. He's freaking out. Hopper and Owens reach Joyce, and the demo dogs begin making their way towards them. More gunfire. Demo dogs are just murdering people in the hallways. They're charging around, taking people out. They manage to get into a room, our heroes, with some surveillance monitors, and they see just how many demo dogs they're dealing with.
Right.
And then, boom, the lights go out, which is great. I mean, I like that the lights go out, howls echo, and the scene ends, and we go to opening credits. And I like that our opening scene here, that our opening incident, as it were, the last thing that happens in it, which is the lights going out, is precisely the mission that's going to have to be done, which is getting them back on. It's just really good writing.
Right.
It's good editing. It's a good way to break this up across the opening. And it's just very careful. It's there's a lot of care that goes into this show. And that's what I like about it.
And you know, when I first watched this episode, this opening scene, Joshua P. in the chat says it gave him Jurassic Park vibes.
Oh, shit. That's a great point.
With the glass and everything. And for me, it was when they were showing everyone running the hallway and the elevators opening and then just like seeing these demo dogs everywhere and people being eaten alive. It made me think of Cabin in the Woods.
Okay.
That big ending scene where it's like they're in this lab.
Yep.
All these people in a lab and it's like the elevator door opens. There's another thing that's going to fucking kill you. Except in this, it's only these one specific things, but it felt so like much like Cabin in the Woods to me.
Awesome.
Like that's what it made me think of too.
I like it. When you first said Cabin in the Woods, I was like, where are you going with this? But then you totally made sense.
Oh,
there.
I know. I always make sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure you do.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. Oh, I just want to quickly shout out anybody who's listening to this on Spotify. I really appreciate that. Our Spotify, some of the information we got from Spotify as to the people listening on Spotify was unexpected and overwhelming. So I appreciate anyone who's listening to us on Spotify. Very, very cool. Shout out to all of you Spotify users and shout out to Spotify for inviting us onto their platform. Very cool. So after the opening credits, we get over to my main man, Billy. Right? You loved him a little bit.
Oh, I didn't. Did not love
when
him.
He shook his
I didn't love him.
He did the tush shake like this.
I did not love Billy ever once.
I wish this was a video podcast. He's doing this. this little dance.
The actor who plays Billy is unarguably like fucking attractive. Like,
sure.
He's really handsome. And in real life, he's got an accent. So he's even more handsome when he's not Billy.
What type of accent?
I think it's Australian.
Oh, he talks like that,
no,
does he?
Now I got to check it because I don't know. But he's handsome.
Oh,
but
now
I
you like
don't like
me,
him.
Jessica? You can't deny it?
No. And this is what I don't like.
How they talk over there.
This is what I don't like about the show.
Go.
Is everyone's like, oh, wait till you get to the end and you see about his dad. You'll know. Oh, you'll know.
I like that voice. Hold on.
I don't know.
Hold on. Stop.
Oh, he's from Perth, Australia. So I win. And he is handsome in real life.
So who is the voice you're doing? I like it.
I don't know. It's all the people who said to me like, oh, wait till you see his dad. Then you'll understand. Then you'll understand. Oh, I'm sorry. His daddy was mean to him and slapped him in the face. Oh, well, that must mean he should treat his sister like shit and try to run kids over with his car. He's be a racist person who is also in love with Steve Harrington. Like,
wow.
Really worked up about it.
I guess.
That person who left the review that says, all I do is say I love people and hate people is going to be real mad about this episode.
Mm-hmm. They gave you a 1-star.
Yeah, they can kiss my ass.
They gave us collectively a 1-star. Well, those are my favorites. My favorite reviews are 1-stars. I like to read them. They make me laugh.
They used to make me like really depressed and like hate myself, but now they make me really happy.
Jesus Christ, you better not read them then.
I know, I made it. No, at first they did, but then now they make me smile in my heart.
Mm.
And I want to say hello to those people. Hello, people.
Tell them you love them.
I love you.
Anyone who writes a 1-star review, she loves you.
I love you and I appreciate it.
And you're her
it.
Favorite
and
character.
And guess what? You guys all write your little 1-star reviews, but then you still fucking listen because then you're like, I listened to 7 episodes. Oh. Well, after you didn't like 2, you probably should have stopped. Just saying.
I thought it didn't bother you.
No, I'm just giving them advice.
Oh, okay.
About life.
Well,
they're funny though.
When you put your shit out there in the public, that's going to be haters. Haters and lovers.
Oh, God. So I can't write a book.
If you universally loved, I'm definitely dubious of that. Like, if you have all positives, I'm like, that's weird.
Wait, like, who is universally loved?
But let's continue.
Leonardo
DiCaprio?
Because
we're getting way off track here.
Steve Harrington?
Let's talk about Billy.
Oh, God. Universally hated Billy.
For real Billy.
Yeah. His parents get home. And it's not his parents.
What do you think about
dad.
That poster, that 80s chick?
I loved it.
Mm-hmm.
That was the best part of Billy in his life, is that 80s chick poster.
Mm-hmm.
Billy's dad looks like a nerd who got beat up his whole life. So he grew up and in turn beat his kids. Like, that's what he looks like to me. He looks like a real fucking loser. And Max's mom looks like a sweet older version of Max with red hair. Just like Max has.
Yeah.
I don't know why she's married to this douche wagon.
Neil is a bit of a fucking jerk off, huh?
But isn't that what he looks like? He looks like he was made fun of his whole life and he was like really skinny and little and kids beat him up. So then he joined the army and got all fucked up and started beating people up. He's like, I'm going to be tough now.
Is that his origin story?
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know how he got into the army. I just figured like, how do you go from getting beat up and being a wuss and then you're tough? I'm like, I think if you go in the army, it makes you go be tough.
Sometimes. Works
but
for some people.
I think he'd probably be like a crazy person who then murdered somebody and beats his children, which is
this isn't a bad origin story, but
it's real good. I'm gonna write it.
I think, but you might have some parent issues because every parent in the show you think is a murderer of people.
No, I don't think Joyce murders people or Hopper, but Hopper's daughter actually died. So that's
yeah,
really
so did he kill her?
I don't think cancer killed her.
Did he kill his daughter? He might have.
I don't think so.
Based on what you're saying,
it'd be real messed up if he did that.
Well, anyway, he smacks Billy around here because he doesn't know where Max is.
But, he smacks him one time.
I got to ask, ladies, how do you like the old cologne squirt on the dick? It's nice, right?
Oh. I don't know if that's a real thing that people do, and I don't know if a woman has ever smelled a man's penis, but...
Well, of course she has.
No, like on purpose? Like, ooh, it smells good.
That happened to me a lot.
Oh, my God.
They just... Deep, deep inhalations.
Yeah. Don't put cologne on your,
Yeah.
It's unnecessary. No one is
for
there.
Sure. Shower and wash and change your clothes daily, though.
Yeah, I mean that's good. Like, definitely shower before you're gonna go on a date and like do a good scrub job. But maybe you didn't have time to shower because he's too busy hairspraying his hair.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I
can't
know
answer for him. But if I was going on a date with him, I don't think I'd be into it.
Now you've entertained the possibility of possibly going on a date with
him. No, I'm never going to go on a date with him because I literally hate him. And there's no way that anything can happen in 1 hour of television on the next episode that will make me love him.
We'll see.
Unless he makes out with Steve Harrington. And that changes them.
That's weird. But okay. I'm not going to judge you for your kinks.
I ship that.
So, yeah, man, this is a rough scene. He's hard on him, slaps him around in front of Susan.
And Susan's just like, oh, no.
He's kind of a piece of shit, this Neil character.
Yeah, he's a real piece of shit, for sure.
And, yeah, that's it for Billy. We see, we get a brief look into Billy's home life. We know we're going to get more on Billy, obviously.
Yeah, I'm sure it'll be season three plot line.
They wouldn't be introducing this at this point if it wasn't going to be something, though. It's too late. But let's get to the railroad tracks. Steve and Co. We got Steve, Max, Lucas, Dustin.
Mm-hmm.
Did I miss somebody? Steve, Max, Lucas, Dustin? Max, no.
Lucas, Dustin. No, it was like a double date.
Yeah, I got you.
But not. Two bros, guy and a girl. Just walking down the train tracks.
But let's talk about this little argument. I like this. So Lucas learns about Muse being eaten. He's obviously pissed off at Dustin for keeping this entire DART thing a secret. You put the party in jeopardy. Dustin says he did. Dustin says, well, you did too by telling an outsider the truth. They sort of argue back and forth quite a bit. Lucas has a point here, though, doesn't he?
They both do in their own messed up way. But yeah, Lucas has a major point. It's you know, Dustin knows that this Demodog specific one was dark because he recognizes the markings. He talks about molting, how he's going to be fully grown. Mm-hmm. And that's when Steve's like, then he's going to eat more than cats. And I love this scene because I love their timing. They're so good, like the way they play off each other. He's like, he ate a cat? And Dustin says no. And Steve's like, yeah, he ate Muse. Like, it's totally like, oh, yeah. Who's Muse? Like Max says. It's really cute. Like, that's the thing the show does so well is these like cute little like moments that they have with each other. They do such a good job of playing off each other when they're in scenes together. And so this is like this dramatic thing where crazy shit is going on. And they're still funny, you know?
Sure. Steve notes the noise. They all heard the noise and they kind of step off the railroad tracks and they move into the woods. Lucas looks with his binoculars and he spots the lab. Yeah. And he says, it's the lab and they're going back home.
Yep.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, uh-oh, because guess who's at the lab? All of our friends, guys.
Indeed.
Bad news.
Yeah. So we hop back over to the lab. Owens and Hopper discuss the locks, how there's a fail secure. The breakers have to be reset to open the doors. And then Bob tells Hopper that he understands how to do this. Hopper doesn't, and he's like, oh, I don't know basic. And Hopper says, well, just, you know, teach me basic. To which Bob says, sure, and while I'm at it, I'll teach you French.
Shall I teach you French while I'm at it, Jim? And he says it like he's so incredulous. Like, how could this man say something so foolish?
Right.
And I love this moment. It made me laugh so hard both times I watched. It's so funny. I don't know. I love Bob.
Yeah, he's... Sean Astin shines here. He really flexes his acting chops amongst his peers here. I think he does a good job. You know, it's definitely worthy. Bob says he's going to take care of this, so he heads off. And we get this real, I noticed at the second watch, we cut to a dead officer, which they're looting his body for weaponry and gear. But that top-down shot of the dead officer right after Bob takes off is great foreshadowing.
Yeah.
It's a great foreshadowing moment on a rewatch.
I do love that before he's going to go, he says, oh, it's okay. Remember, Bob Newby, superhero. Mm-hmm. And literally my heart breaks.
Yes.
I can't have it.
That blows because you knew going in.
Oh my God. It's like, it's so sad.
Also, little things that I appreciate about this. He hands Bob the .45 and Bob is sort of brandishing the weapon in front of him, thus pointing it at Hopper. And Hopper just pushes his hand away so it's not pointing at him.
Mm-hmm.
These are the little details that make me happy. That certain other shows sometimes miss.
I wonder what those shows could be.
Anyway, he gives Bob a quick lesson in the gun. Bob says, don't wait for me. As soon as I get those doors open, I'll get them out. Hopper finishes. And we take off.
Oh, God. So much foreshadowing of how this is going to go for Bob. Especially like the second time through actually watching the episode. Because, you know, even being spoiled that Bob is going to die, I didn't know when, I didn't know what episode, I didn't know any details, I just knew he was going to die before the end of the show. This episode does a real good job of the foreshadowing, like Dean was already saying, with the employee when he calls himself a superhero. He says, don't wait for me. You know, a lot of that stuff going on in this one. And again, Well, I guess when Bob actually dies, we can talk a little bit more about it.
Sure. We got to get Nancy and Jonathan in this foray, so let's get them to the lab. Jonathan tries the gate, no luck, because of course the power is out. Jonathan and Nancy run into Steve and the kids, who emerge from the woods with their flashlights. They're all looking for Mike and Will, basically. So now we have the two groups merged, and now we're about to merge them with the other group so we can, you know, keep these through lines tight and together and get everyone next to each other, which I appreciate a lot. I like that we're doing this. We're not all on separate missions. I like that we're all converging in one place for a very important confrontation.
You know what? I think everyone's going to do their job. I like that other show where people don't do their job.
Right. Anyway, Nancy, we go back to, the kids, they all hear the creepy noises coming from the lab. So we know that they're going to approach the lab now.
Yeah. And there's a lot of like cutting back and forth where they're trying to get the gate to open, like, and then the power goes on.
Here.
And that's all going on in between like Bob in the basement, like getting shit done, like a champion among men.
And like a beautiful, beautiful man.
Angel among men.
Who I never thought he could do without Frodo, but goddamn it, he did.
No, he was always the one who carried Frodo. He was the true hero of the movie.
I don't like that theory. I think it's stupid.
I have to go back and redo all the Lord of the Rings podcasts we've done.
Okay. So Bob heads off into the bowels of the lab looking to reset the main. He finds some dead people. They're torn up pretty bad. He then finds the main power breaker. He clicks it on, and then we get that, you know, electricity noise. As everything turns on, the lights start popping back, and then Nancy notices the power as well. So they try again, no luck on the gate. And then we get this sort of back and forth where Owens contacts Bob, who gets to the computer system, and Bob starts to reactivate doors, etc. He opens the exterior gate, which makes Dustin think he did something. Bob gets to head out. Owens warns him to sit tight. He says, West stairwell. And that's when Bob has an idea. He fires up the fire suppression systems, and Owens is like, okay, that worked. Like, I love the way he does
excited.
It right there.
Oh, it's fantastic.
Awesome.
He's
great in this.
For this, not minor character, but such a smaller character. And again, it's hard in an established show to be the new guy, to be the Bob, to be the Max, to be the Dr. Owens even.
Sure,
and they all like did such a good job.
I'm glad that your instinct about him was right, where we're going to set him up like a bad guy, but he is going to be...
Well, still one more episode.
And somebody in the Alliance, but based on his behavior...
I think he's probably dead now.
Yeah, that's a good question.
I think...
Well, until...
They say at one point, like, everybody in that lab is dead.
Yeah, but until we see it.
I know, so maybe, but I don't know. I'm not optimistic for him, but I hope we at least get to give him a proper goodbye.
I think after you have a character in the show for this many episodes, you don't just off-screen death him. I don't see them doing that.
Yeah.
Not in this show. Some shows might do that, but... No, I don't mean that as a diss. I'm just saying.
Game of Thrones did that once.
Yeah, I don't mind it if it's done correctly, but I think it's out of... I don't think it works in this
show. No, you're right. All right,
show.
So maybe we'll see him one more time, but I imagine it will be... I still imagine... I imagine if he's a good guy, we're at the end of his lifespan coming
we'll see.
Soon.
Owens tells Hopper to go. He will keep an eye on the monitors. Hopper goes with Mike, Will, and Joyce.
And again, I love this about Owens.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is such a, you know, he's like, all right, I believed in these people. We got into this mess. You know, I wanted to do the right thing. And he's like, all right, I'm going to sit here and probably signing my own death warrant so I can make sure these people get out.
Yep. I like when Hopper steps into the hallway with the M16. It's sweet.
Hopper's a badass and I love him.
Joyce waits for Bob at the entrance because they get to the entrance. They're pretty close to the entrance.
Yes.
Which I like. They just had a couple things in their way.
Right, because you could drag this out and make this whole giant long thing. And even Bob, once he gets going, isn't that far from the entrance, you see, you know, which is, it's good. And I guess that does give you some hope for Owen, seeing how close to the entrance they were. Although it's overrun with demi-dogs now, so. Oh. But yeah, I like that we didn't, that could have been a long drag out thing and it could have lasted two episodes. I'm trying to get out of the building. We don't need that. We have other stuff we got to do. Let's move him out quick.
Right.
You know?
And then we get this great moment where Joyce, Hopper exits. Joyce turns around, puts her hand on the door jamb, and we kind of like dolly in on her. Like the camera comes right in on her as she's standing there. I love that shot. It's really cool.
Mm-hmm. Just waiting.
Just waiting. And we go back to Owens directing Bob.
Right. He's going to go meet him.
This is cool.
Time.
He says, I'm going to guide you. Owens advises him to take it slow. He guides him along, helping him avoid demos. And that's when Owens spots one and he just says, stop.
Before that, we skipped over a whole important thing and more foreshadowing. So when Bob's going to leave, we get the stairwell isn't clear. He turns on the sprinkler system. We didn't talk about that. We didn't talk about when Bob...
We did talk about the sprinkler system, fire suppression.
Did we talk about... Oh, fire suppression. Did we talk about... And then when Bob heads out immediately after this, and this is when he leaves his gun.
No, he's... Yeah, he left his gun somewhere. Oh, on the desk.
Yeah, before he even... Before Hopper and Joyce leave, we Correct. See Bob forget his gun.
Whoopsie. Bad move, buddy.
And again, the camera... It's like, here's his gun. He left it. Mm-hmm. And you're like, fuck. But you still think he's going to get out.
Yeah.
At this point, the first time we watched the episode, Dean said, he is dead.
When he left his gun behind, yeah. I thought he was in trouble.
Yeah. Seriously.
Owens advises him to take it slow. And that's when he tells him to stop. He directs Bob into this closet, right? So Bob complies.
So scary. Sweating, like breathing
Great
heavy.
Great suspense.
Oh, Bob.
It's cool to see... real suspense like this.
Mm-hmm.
And it worked very well. You know, when you first meet Bob, you know, you said something a moment ago about Owens. It's tough to come in when you've got these established characters, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's a hard thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
Think of how hard it is for Bob.
Yeah.
Everybody ships Hopper and
Joyce.
Right. And when Bob's in the mix, everyone probably collectively groans.
Yeah.
Then you realize it's Sean Astin and you lighten up a little.
Because you love him in your heart.
But you're like, yeah, but it's got to be Hopper. But then you start to really come to respect Bob in the way he treats Joyce and her family, in the way he is a nice guy and he's crazy about her. And you start to really like him. You know, you start to really love the Bob character. And that's a hard thing to do in a show. It's easy just to bring in the extra guy and have him be some sort of antagonist for our heroes. And he's a prick. He's a pain in the ass.
Yeah.
But to put him in this situation and to say, you're going to be rooting for, if I said to you, stop, this guy, Bob, that you just met, who you're annoyed with because Hopper is not in the picture, you're going to cry when he dies.
I know.
In a few episodes because you're going to really come to love and appreciate the character. And that's something that this show did a great job with.
I agree.
You know, second season, that's a really good point. It's hard. You know, it's hard to bring in these new characters and have anybody give a shit. We care about Max. We care about Bob. We care about Owens a little bit. You know, it's cool.
And Bob was the one who's like directly like messing with one of our couples that we're rooting for here.
Sure, of course.
Which is why, again, you kind of know he's got to die.
Mm-hmm.
Because at the end of the day, the only way we get our two people together that we know the end game is for them to be together in some manner is we got to kill Bob off. Like, because Bob's not going to be a bad guy and break hearts. He's going to be a good guy.
Mm.
Like, Joyce is going to say, like, oh, this is what it's like to have a man that cares about me and treats me well, you know?
Yeah, sure,
It's nice for Joyce to have that. It's very sweet for her to have somebody like him.
Right, right. Absolutely.
That poor lady deserves it. She's had a tough fucking go.
You're right. The chat seeing the gun probably wouldn't have helped him.
They're
probably right. I mean, it didn't help anyone else who got killed in there with better guns.
But it's still, when you see that gun left on the counter, it gives you that pause of, ooh, it's not looking
good. Is it possible the gun could have given him enough time just to get out, maybe? You know, he might have approached everything a little differently if he was armed. Who knows? Tough to say, but...
Yeah. I think it was just supposed to make you on edge.
You're supposed to, yeah, of course. It was a tension-building moment, and it was cool. And it showed you his complete and utter lack of knowledge of firearms and even being used to them at all to just totally space it out.
In that type of circumstance, yeah. Right.
Whereas some people be like, where's my fucking gun?
Yep.
Right.
Yeah, for sure.
Cool. So back to the suspense here. Bob watches the shadow of the demo dog under the door as it walks by. Owen says, how you holding up there, Bob? I like that. You got a pretty clear shot to the front door. You can do this. You're almost home free. All right, Bob? Man, put yourself in Owen's shoes. Like, what a stressful thing to do, to direct this guy mm-hmm. through certain death.
Yep.
I mean, you're responsible for his life.
Yep.
So Bob steps out of the closet, and we get this great slow motion moment as the broom comes with him and clicks down onto the tile, thus attracting the demo dog. And that's when Owens just says, run.
Oh, my God. And Bob runs.
Bob runs. Slow motion, dramatic effect. Bob reaches the front lobby, and then he gets blindsided.
Yes, because he manages the dog that's chasing him, the one that he is concerned with, he manages to lock behind mm-hmm. him, and he sees Joyce, and it is all good. He's out. He smiles at his woman. He is leaving here with her. He yeah. is taking her to prom.
Yeah, this is like I don't know why. This reminds me of like Platoon or Vietnam movies where the guy's like running to the helicopter and he gets fucking shot before he gets there. Like, fuck, he was so close.
I know.
He was so close. No. I love when Hopper races back in and opens fire, shell casings. And Bob is just getting fucking destroyed. Like, it's bad. It's brutal. And Hopper and Joyce are forced to retreat. He has to pull her out. He's yelling, he's gone. Jonathan pulls up in the car. Hopper and Jonathan speed to the gate. The kids all pile into Hopper's truck, and Bob is essentially consumed.
Yeah.
I hope he doesn't suck.
That's not even funny.
Sorry. It's kind of funny. That's a good meal. This is stocky, man.
Ugh, rude.
That hot dogs will eat well for a while.
Rude.
Yeah.
It was really sad.
It was sad, man. It was intense.
It made me really, really fucking sad.
You cried. It's okay. You can say it.
It was like really emotional to watch. It made me like actually like physically feel like, you know, you get like goosebumps and you like feel it.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's really how I felt. Just like him seeing her and like her watching that happen to him, like them thinking they're so close. And you know, this guy did nothing wrong. He did nothing but be a nice, normal fucking guy who worked for Radio Shack and got pulled into this thing because he loved this woman. And then he was a hero and he saved everybody.
It's cool.
How is that not like, does that not make you cry? Do you have a soul? I don't know. But it is real fucking sad.
Yeah. And this is a distinct break in the episode. We've got two distinct confrontations here in this episode. And that is it's perfect. It's right in the middle of the episode. It's a break. We get this big fade to black, and then we cut to what will be the second half of the episode and the second challenge, which will now be communicating with Will and trying to rescue mm-hmm. Will. We've lost Bob. Now we can only hope that we can save Will.
People in the chat are saying a demo dog that killed Bob was like somebody that worked on the set.
What do you mean?
That they had act out the demodog part when they were filming it.
Oh, cool.
Like, it was just a random, somebody said a hairdresser and then somebody else said a writer. Now, if this is true, I'd like to know because I'm very interested in that. His name is Doug in 51st Dates, Joshua. Because I've seen that meme. It's really funny. It's of Sean Astin. It says, you know, he played like Rudy and Samwise Gamgee and now we remember him as Bob from Stranger Things and Doug from 51st Dates. If you've never seen it, Google it. It's funny. He looks funny. He wears like a mesh shirt.
Never seen it.
It's the movie's not that great, but okay. Sean Astin's in it.
Is that an Adam Sandler film?
Yes. Andrew Barrymore, of course.
Jesus Christ.
Anyway, it's really fucking sad and it's awesome. And I love Bob and I will not forget him. And I just want to make it clear that he was one of those people, you know, and I say this sometimes, especially in Game of Thrones about characters where I'm like, oh my God, I didn't appreciate them enough when they were alive. And I really, truly feel that way about Bob. And people all love Barb and stuff. And like, Barb was cool and all, but whatever, honestly.
You're over
like,
it.
Compared to Bob, she was just some redhead in two episodes that told Nancy not to bang Steve Harrington. And at this point, I'm like, Nancy, you should have banged Steve Harrington more when you had the chance. Look at his hair. So Barb was wrong about that.
Are you not shipping Jonathan and Nancy anymore?
I just don't care. I've moved on. I shipped them. They probably should date and stuff. They seem like a good couple.
You moved on. Why? Because you're back on the Steve bandwagon?
Yeah, because I'm in love with Steve now.
You're a fickle beast.
I know.
Anyway, cheers to Bob. We'll miss you, buddy.
Bob, having a drink for you, my friend. I'll think about you and talk about you.
When she clutches her pillow at night.
Bob,
she'll probably be thinking of Steve, but when she needs her, I don't know, computer restarted, she'll think of you.
Which I do right now. My computer is not working well, Bob. Please call me.
Oh, man.
What a sweetie pie.
Okay.
R.I.P.
So Jonathan tries to talk to Will. Hopper's on the phone. He's obviously pissed off. I am the police. He's calling for some help. Mike says, we can't just sit here while those things are loose. Hopper consoles Joyce. Let's talk about this scene.
Sure. I have so many things I want to say about this because there are a lot of little moments that I like a lot. I like Jonathan.
He just
Jonathan.
Walks in and sits on the floor.
I was going to talk about that one last, but I was going to go through the scene and get to that point. But now since you blew my load, I guess we can start there.
I'm pretty good at that, huh?
when Hopper goes into the bedroom to see Joyce and she is sitting on the bed and he just sits down on the floor, it's a 30-second, if that moment.
If that.
It is one of the most fantastic things I've ever seen between two characters because
ever?
I felt...
It's a bit hyperbolic.
No, but I felt so much emotion from both of him and this understanding of her being like grief-stricken to the point of almost like probably like, I don't know, not even knowing what to do next and him knowing the thing to do is just go and just
shut up.
Sit with her mm-hmm. and do nothing. And it was like, I don't know, it was like powerful. I just loved everything about it. It was one tiny moment that reminded me why I shipped them and why Bob had to die. Just kidding.
Jesus Christ. Fuck, man.
Just kidding. I still love Bob, but not kidding.
They haven't even finished eating him yet.
I know. His corpse is still warm.
You know, it's funny you think about, remember, Hopper's been through a terrible tragedy, so he might have an inkling as to how to say nothing, how to just sit and be present,
mm-hmm.
right? So she doesn't feel totally alone. But, you know, we get this kind of music rolling in, and that's when Mike said, this actually gave me goosebumps when I was watching it, when Mike's like, did you guys know that Bob was the original founder of the Hawkins AV? I was like, oh, there was just something about a kid saying something nice about the guy that died that he didn't know very well. There was something really touching about that.
Tear up a lot of this too. We can't let him die in vain, he said.
Mm-hmm. So they start weighing their options.
Oh, before you even go, this is something we totally skipped over because you skipped over everything that happened before that moment in the bedroom.
Just say what you need to say.
Is Hopper talking to the police on the phone and he makes the mistake that is going to fuck them all over, which is by saying, yep, I'll be at this number. Call me back here.
Mm-hmm.
And that is what is going to really derail our plan at the end of the episode and lead into whatever the end of this episode, which is going to lead into our finale.
Cool.
So I just wanted to point that out.
Mike says, if we stop him, we stop his army, referring to the Shadow Monster. So they're talking Shadow Monster. They talk about how the Shadow Monster is inside of everything. It's a hive mind, a super organism, essentially. The Shadow Monster is the brain, like the Mind Flayer. So the Mind Flayer comes up here. Dustin talks about the Mind Flayer. Hopper just says, that's a kid's game. No, it's a manual. Monster manual at that. They talk master race, like the Germans. You mean Nazis, Dustin? Correct, Steve? Hilarious.
That's a funny, cute little moment. Oh, the Germans? Nazis?
We're also reminded that Steve isn't too bright, but he has wisdom.
Yeah.
Right? It's
like
funny.
The Germans. Nazis.
It's
like
funny.
He immediately knew, like, yeah, the master race, the Germans. No, Steve. No.
So the destruction of our world as we know it, Nancy says, well, if this is a brain and we kill it, Dustin, they start talking about that. And that's when Dustin says, okay, you just got to summon undead army. And never mind, it's a game. Hopper, of course, is a little pissed off at this. And then they reckon with Joyce. And she comes out with a steel heart. Ready for courage and combat. We have to kill it, she says. And Mike says, listen, if anybody knows how to kill this thing, it's Will. He will know its weaknesses. And they surmise that he can't spy on us if he doesn't know where. He can't spy if he doesn't know where it is, right? Where he
right,
is.
Right.
So they're going to deprive Will of any external stimuli that could reveal his whereabouts.
Yeah, and Steve's like, I know a lot about the Germans, and I think I can really help get this thing going, like a little Nazi torture chamber. He remembers, because that's what it looks like to me. The blank walls, the bright lights, like, doesn't that seem like a place where you take somebody and torture them to, like, invest to something? That made me think of.
Sure.
Thought, like, Saeed from Lost was going to be there, putting bamboo under your fingernails.
Mm.
Just saying. Anyways.
So they black out the shed. Nancy talks to Steve a little. What you did helping the kids, that was really cool. Want to fuck?
No, she doesn't want to fuck him no more because she banged Jonathan and she likes his emo ways and that he cried after.
Really?
Yeah, she liked that.
She clutched him to her bosom as he sobbed onto her chest?
Yeah, after their 30-second experience that lasted almost as long as that scene of Joyce and Hopper.
Ripping fucking ropey trails across her and that guy's pullout couch.
She's like, oh, I waited so
Yikes.
Long.
Moo.
Murray's
in there rolling around in their dirty sheets.
I just threw up.
I love kids. Oh, yeah.
Oh, Murray's in there.
Well, it's weird.
I did want to, the thing about the shed, too, that I like that this is the location they use.
Yeah.
Is because this is where Will was originally taken from.
Right.
He was in the shed.
Right.
And I like that full circle that they're coming back and they're using the same location that he, you know, was originally taken from.
Okay.
I
have one thing I want to say. Now, this is a great episode, but here might be something I do want to mention.
Okay.
I don't know about you, but I think people underestimate people's ability to recognize places they are via smell. Like, big time.
Okay.
Like, if I was in my garage, I'd probably be like, I think I'm in my garage. Like, you know what I mean? Only because he grew up there. Like, I could see if they took him to a shed in the middle of a field somewhere, but whatever. It's fine. It's not a big deal. But
like, he's all fucked up and shit.
He is all fucked up.
The lights are so bright and they put all the ammonia under his nose. So he probably wasn't smelling good either, Dean. I can smell ammonia.
Maybe that's why they did it.
I think they did it to wake him up, right? But he still probably had that scent in his nose, right? I mean, ammonia is a real strong. It's like,
I'll accept that he's fucked up and everything else, and he's been through hell.
A lot of ammonia.
He smells a lot of emotions.
And you know what? Like, if they had put a clothespin on his nose,
no,
it would have been really hard to take it seriously. You know what I'm saying?
Take this thing off my nose, you liars! Where am I? Like that?
Yeah, that'd be brutal. I don't think that would have gone well. Just saying.
They could do what they do in Sounds of the Lambs. Put Bengay under their nose so they don't smell the corpse when they pull out of the river.
Isn't that the cops really do that? I bet they do.
I don't know. Maybe if you're a homicide cop, I don't know.
I don't know. Do we know any homicide cops? I can ask them.
I know some major crimes cops.
Cool.
Murder police, as they say.
I like murder police. It sounds like a really fun job.
Well, anyway, Steve just says, yeah, the little shit's real trouble. So Dustin apologizes to Lucas. If you want your girlfriend to take my spot in the party, she can have it. So this is Dustin sort of apologizing, but also kind of being a little self-loathing.
Yeah. But it's sad. Like, Dustin was really into Max and stuff. And, you know, it's sad. But I like when Dustin's like, oh, I saw you holding hands. And Lucas says it was nothing. And Dustin's like, maybe. Like, Lucas says she was scared. He says, maybe, but he felt it, the electricity, which calls back to his conversation with Steve, where Steve's like, y'all know, you know, with a girl. And Dustin's like, yep, I see it, just not with me. And I think it's sweet, and it makes me love Dustin a lot. And like, I ship Lucas and Max, don't get me wrong. I think they're a cute little couple. But man, do I love Dustin. He's such a sweetie pie. I just like that moment when he says that. He's like resigned to the fact that he knows him and Max are not going to be.
And he loves his friend enough to where
he can step back.
Correct.
It's very sweet.
So Max and Mike talk. Just because you know the truth, you're not in the party. So this is more Max complimenting 11, Mike giving Max a cold shoulder, Max admitting 11 sounds awesome, and Max just struggling to connect with Mike still.
And Mike says what he says at the end, like, that thing took her just like it took Bob.
Sure.
And then he's about to be reunited with her at the end of the episode. You know, like feeling that way, like those emotions, like, wow, that thing took Bob just like it took 11, but he's going to get 11 back, which is, you know, heightened emotions and stuff.
Max has a lot of patience, huh?
She does. She's very sweet. I really, really, really like Max. I do. I really like her. I like her in the scene. She's nice about 11. And I like when she's like, yeah, I know I can't be in the party. Who would want to Zoom her anyway? Like, she always calls herself like her made up knit thing that she decided she wants to be. I don't know. It's cute. I like her. I do.
So we get this bit of a blackout montage. Everyone waits in the house except Hopper, Mike, Jonathan, and Nancy. Max asks if he will send dogs if he finds out where they are. And Lucas kind of just says it'll be Judgment Day or something like that. So they start with this will stuff. It's a bit of an interrogation, but also a bit of a shower him with love and affection, see if Will is still reachable underneath the powerful psyche of the Shadow Monster. And then, why am I tied up? Why am I tied up? And he gets that Reagan McNeil, exorcist voice. Like that exorcist shit creeped me out.
Yep.
That was a real, true, horror movie moment.
When he's in the thing,
voice. Yeah, yep. It was cool.
The panicking, this is not good. We can't let this kid free, you know?
Nancy recalls Will using all the colors in the color. So they start to go through Nancy.
Will does.
What the hell's her name?
Her name is Joyce. Yeah, they talk about, the colors is first.
They go, so anyway, they're just going through this stuff. Everyone, you were so embarrassed. I was so proud. Jonathan asks if he recalls Building Castle Byers. And that's when we, the audience, see Will tapping his chair.
Mm-hmm.
Mike says, and I actually think I wrote this down verbatim because this is great.
Oh, I know. It's so good.
Mike says, do you remember the first day we met? I knew nobody. I had no friends. I felt so alone and so scared, but I see you on the swings and you were alone too. You were swinging by yourself. I walked up to you and asked if you want to be my friend and you said yes. It was the best thing I've ever done. Something like that.
Oh, it's my awesome. God. This is like so heartwarming. And again, I was saying, and I talk about this constantly, and I've talked about it so much with Will this season, of how I worried he wasn't going to be a good little kid actor and how he's been so fantastic and he's done such a great job. And Mike has almost been overshadowed by everyone else. He's had such a smaller role this season. And I watched him in this scene and him telling the story, this little monologue, and it made me think about what a good actor this little kid is. I know he's not a little kid. I know he's like 13. If you heard me call him a little kid, he probably punched me in the face. But I just think about like going to see It and like Richie Tozier and how Richie Tozier is a completely different character than Mike. Completely different. And how good he is in both roles. And that says so much for a kid so young. You know? That's a great point. He really is so good. And that was such a sweet little moment. I loved it. I loved it.
Nancy says, if you're in there, just please talk to us. Can you do that for me, please? Will starts to cry a little bit. He then resolves himself against this onslaught of emotion. And he just says, let me go.
And this is when Hopper notices that he's tapping.
Correct.
I think.
Yeah. You're correct. Yep.
So Hopper goes into the house. He's got to tell everybody else, like, hey, I think he's doing Morse code. Hopper obviously knows Morse code because he did it with 11. And the kids do because, you know, they're, you know, 13-year-old boys in the 80s. So of course they know Morse code. I'm sure that was a common thing. So they're going to figure out, they're going to keep Will in the memories, and Hopper's going to signal over the Morse code to everybody in the house so that they can figure out whatever he's trying to say. Because what he's saying originally is here.
Mm-hmm. Meaning he's present.
Yeah.
Right. So yeah, this is another, it's a bit of a montage too, where John's playing the music. He's asking me for members. They start piecing together some of the letters through Morse code. They continue to recall old times. They're using these fond memories to help reach Will so he can communicate this message to them.
But, and this is great. I love the music. The Should I Stay or Should I Go? Because they've used that song a lot. Mm-hmm. And you know, the story is, do you remember when we played this song? Do you remember this D&D game? You saved the party.
Sure.
Do you remember you gave your girl your truck and I said we couldn't afford a new one and you wanted her to have it because she was sad? Like, the sweetest little stories. I like it. I like the little montage. The like, all right, well, like, this is who you are.
Mm-hmm.
We know who you are. I like it. I like the music. It's well done.
And then we zero in on close gate. So the phone rings, Will hears it, and now the jig is up. This is great suspense too, this oh shit moment.
Yes.
Well, that's a bummer. I think Nancy rips it off the wall.
Yes, Nancy rips it off the wall because it rings a second time after, I think Dustin picks it up and hangs it up, and then Nancy rips it off the wall.
Will does his eyes in the back of his head, summoning demo dogs.
Demo dogs.
Bad news. And that's when Hopper says it knows we are here. They sedate Will again. Man, this kid's going to have a fucking hope they don't kill him by accident.
I mean, I'm sure as long as it's not a heavy dose of a sedative, they won't kill him.
Thanks.
Just getting an IM.
Thanks, doctor. They all hear howls. It's fucking scary. And that's when everyone piles back into the house quickly. Hopper has a couple of guns. He's got like what looks like a little .22 that Nancy takes over.
Yeah, she knows that. Jonathan, do you know how to use this? Because you're a man. Jonathan's like, oh, no. Nancy's like, oh, I do. I wear the pants in this relationship, sir. Thank you.
And Hopper gets his M16 up. They wait. The howls intensify. They grow closer. They seem to be right outside. More suspense, more noise intensity. And then one crashes through the window, but it is not crashing through the window to attack them. It is, in fact, dead.
It is dead. Dead.
We get a wonderful slow motion. Yeah. In the chat, Josh P88 says Mike and his candlestick.
I know. There was all their weapons. Lucas had like his wrist rocket thing, didn't he?
Did I say Josh's candlestick?
No, you said Mike, but Josh said it.
Josh said, okay, good.
Lucas always has like the wrist rocket, which makes me think of It so much, like Stephen King.
Yeah, that was
in the
cool.
book, that they use their wrist rockets all the time.
And Lucas has used one before.
Yep. I like it. I like that that's his weapon.
So, and then slow motion, front door, we zoom in on the sneakers or tennis shoes for you people in other parts of the country. And then it's 11 and it's great music. She looks cool. She has the nosebleed. She still has her badass city garb on, and Mike steps forward from the crowd. Both of them are with watery red eyes. It's a beautiful and emotional moment as they see each other. And they're not going to give you that embrace. They're not going to give you that rush to one another. They're cutting it right here. And bang, they're ending the episode. Boom!
I feel I will 100% cry when Eleven and Mike are actually reunited. And Eleven and Hopper. I'm going to fucking cry. Hard.
Yep, it was awesome. And yeah, as Joshua P88 saying in the chat, the synth music as Eleven enters was great.
Fantastic. That,
bong, tchung, pew, boom. I can't do it. But it great. My mouth synthesizer is not as good as an actual synthesizer.
Yeah, it was great.
Yeah, it's awesome. It's cool music. But yeah, that's the end of the episode. Boy, wow.
Real emotional, very emotionally impactful episode for sure.
Yeah.
Very emotional.
It's excellent. It's a really good episode. Plenty of shit happened. Plenty of shit was done. We've geared up for a wonderful finale.
And we got all our people back together. Everyone's on the same mission. They all have knowledge of the same things. You know, it's not like everybody's at a different place doing a different thing. They're all together and they can now... Like, there, someone posted a meme in the Hawkins Report group, and it'll take me forever to find it. I'm not going to be able to do it. I already found it. I'm so good. Shannon Ensley. The best part about Stranger Things is that they can't solve anything until they put the three groups together because each group is acting within a separate genre. Mike, Lucas, Dustin, and Al are in this weird sci-fi coming-of-age story where the group of plucky misfit kids solve the mystery and test their friendship along the way. Nancy and Jonathan are in a horror movie where the teenagers have to kill the monster set against a backdrop of high school drama and romance. Joyce and Hopper are in a conspiracy thriller where the adults have to figure out what shady stuff the government is up to while also dealing with the difficulties of their personal lives. They all approach the issue within the confines of their genre, but none of those approaches work because none of them are seeing the whole picture. It's only when all the threads start to converge that they can actually get anything done. And this is like Shannon Ensley shared on the Facebook page. With all that text, and I read it and I was like, oh my God, like this is so true of the show. Like it really is. They are all almost different movies and then you put them together for your, you know, because you say like, oh, this was like a horror moment and this was more of this. And
that's a really good observation.
It's such a great post.
Yeah, it's awesome.
I love it.
Well, chapter 8 is concluded, Jessica. What are your final thoughts on the Mind Flayer?
I loved it. And, you know, I did not love episode 7, but I knew they were going to come back and be fantastic. I wasn't worried that they were going to go off the wagon.
Nah.
I knew that was a one-off mistake.
All great shows have stinkers once in a while.
They sure do. And this episode was perfect. It was so great coming back to this straight into the action from episode 6. Getting all our people together, getting everyone in on the same plan. Kind of rolling on towards our conclusion. And I mean, I loved it. It was such an emotional episode. There were a lot of feelings, you know. I liked episode 6. Episode 6 was really fun and exciting and a lot of stuff happened. But this episode was just it was really emotional. And like you felt a lot when you watched it, sure. You know. And I feel like the finale is going to be emotional too. Yep. Especially our reunions of our characters and stuff. And then where they're going to go from here. But I was really impressed. I thought it was another great episode. I feel like this season has really, really done a good job following up a great first season.
Sure.
And that's hard to do.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, I'm really excited to learn that they have an end in mind. That's great news. They said it's done at 4 seasons. I'm glad that they, you know, obviously this might be something I save. Yeah, I'll save it for the last episode. But, I will say this. I'm happy to be back recording. It had been too long. It's good to be back here. A lot of new faces in our chat. Thank you very much for showing up. And like I said, a lot of new listeners by way of Spotify. So thank you very much for that. You know, if you're listening to the Stranger Things podcast and you know that there's only one episode left and you're thinking, fuck, I hate that I can't listen to this podcast for another year and a half, maybe longer, whatever they're going to do. You know, LSG Media does a lot of different podcasts. We do the science fiction film podcasts and we go off genre quite a bit. You know, if science fiction isn't your thing, you might be able to find a few movies in there like Goodfellas or Goonies or fuck, we got Westerns in there. We got a lot of different a lot of different podcasts in there. Unfortunately, not all of our other shows are in Spotify. You have to get them through a podcasting app. Your podcasting apps are all free. So get your ass a podcasting app, search for LSG Media, and just start subscribing to any of the shows that you think you might be interested in. And like I said, if you're a science fiction fan, we're doing a Battlestar Galactica podcast. We're launching it December 7th. We're recording this on 11/28. So that's in 9 days, 10 days. So get your ass subscribed to that, and we'll be dropping our coverage of the miniseries and then moving right into the four seasons that follow. And we'll be doing it like we do this one. That will not feature Jessica, though she might guest appear. I bet she would like to.
Yeah, well, I would love to.
That's going to be mostly Matthew Anderson and myself, but I'm sure we'll try to get Jessica over there because she's a fan of the show. So,
big fan.
LSGmedia.net. That's LSGmedia.net. You can look us up. You see what our ugly faces look like. You can find our social media contact information, other podcasts, and more. Jessica, I think we're going to get out of here. What do you say?
I guess we'll get out of here, and can't wait to watch and talk about the finale.
Me too. All right. You guys have a wonderful night.
Bye.